What is your favorite food? I think I can honestly say mine is bread. Now I'm craving my warm sourdough bread with some butter and salt on top. It's honestly the perfect thing to eat. But I'm also realistic, and I know for many of you out there, the carb feel might be real. It is too bad that carb-heavy foods are often the ones we love the most. That's why Hero Bread makes those same delicious favorites free of consequences or compromises. They have remade carby empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, plus protein and fiber. And let me tell you, their products taste amazing. The other day, Dennis and Leah and I were making some grilled cheese sandwiches, and that would be a perfect place to swap in Hero Bread. I am very mindful when it comes to what my daughter eats, and I love that this bread helps you get enough fiber and adds more protein to your diet while cutting down on the sugar. Hero Bread is not only delicious and flavorful, there's something for every craving, including sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas. So don't give up on being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use the code YOGAGIRL at checkout. That's YOGAGIRL at HERO.co. Hi, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Yoga Girl podcast, Conversations from the Heart. I am talking to you today from Costa Rica. If you hear a bunch of cicadas and crazy sounds in the background, it's because I'm deep in the literal jungle right now. And on the show today, I have someone so special that I'm beyond excited to introduce, Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary is a digital media mogul, a serial entrepreneur, motivational speaker, tech investor, New York Times bestselling author, venture capitalist, founder of VaynerMedia. The list is so long, I'm literally losing my breath. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
Man, this resume is so long and impressive. Do you have one of these roles that you identify with more than the others?
Probably entrepreneur. You know, even listening to you like rattle it off, I was kind of like smirking. It's really fun when you're entrepreneurial, you tend to do different things. And so you get to do a lot of different things, try a bunch of different things. But I think the thing that I no question most associate with is just being an entrepreneur, which is the overarching theme of that whole kind of like intro.
Yeah, it relates to all of that. Hard to separate from all the others. So this podcast, it's called From the Heart, and I would love to just start there, you know, speaking totally from the heart right in this moment where you're at. How are you doing?
That's awesome. I love that. I'm doing really well. I'm wildly driven by gratitude. So, you know, I'm pretty much in a place where I'm going to answer positively to the question you just asked. The far majority of my life, only withstanding, you know, the death and illnesses of the people I love the most, which would give a different answer. But every second that I'm lucky enough to not be in a situation where that's the case for somebody I love, I'm in a pretty good mood. I'm a little bit of an old soul that way. If everybody's healthy, I kind of struggle to be upset about business mistakes or shortcomings or things that didn't go the way I wanted or opportunities missed or judgment of others or, you know, a lot of things that I think tend to bring people down when I just wish that they had the perspective of health and everything else is secondary.
Yeah, I really love that about you. And I think that's why it's so easy to follow along on your journey. It's so easy to listen to you speak. Actually, right before we got on this call, my brother, who is a notoriously kind of grumpy guy, he said, "Hey, you have Gary Vee on the podcast. Man, he is as positive as I am negative." I said that's such a good way to describe you, man. It's such a wonderful thing.
I would argue and ponder. It almost makes me think like we're two sides of the same coin. I think it's a protective mechanism. I think a lot of people who tend to, you know, my father's pretty cynical and can be negative, and I've always seen that as him protecting himself, right? And in a lot of ways, I think I do the same with extreme positivity, which is, you know, it really actually has a very similar nuance to each other, and I think it's practical. But I very much don't judge people that are overly, you know, negative. I don't like it, but I don't like it for them because I think they're trying to do the same thing, and I think there's a different way to go about it. And when you change someone's perspective on that, you know, just really, there's two ways to win a sports game. It's offense and defense. And for me, I just think it's in life, it's a lot more fun to be on the offense.
It's an easier life to live, I think, in the long run. But what about, you know, because everyone obviously experiences hard emotions, tough shit, tough days. How do you deal with when you have a crappy day or something doesn't go your way? Do you have a way where you process those emotions, you think differently than other people do?
I think up front, I expect them. You know, I think if you're up to something significant or trying to achieve something of some sort of scale, that you need to, I'm a big fan that, like, I've signed up for this. I'm going for it. So with that, there should be a lot of difficult moments. I mean, I would argue my day is filled with negative micro moments, right? Like, when you are running something, you're basically just trying to fix things. And so, A, I think a lot of people are like, I'm going to start a business. And then when it's challenging, they're upset. And I'm like, you wanted to live on your own terms. Like, that's a minority of people. Like, I would argue that you should know what you're signing up for. So A, knowing what I'm signing up for. And then B, in its most extreme state, when it's got control of me, or there's just, you know, many times in my life and in my career, 3 to 4 significantly bad things can happen in a 24 to 48 hour window. So when you get the serendipity of that much going at you, that's when I go to my default protecting mechanism of, I got to protect myself with perspective. What I, you know, let's role play. Let's make pretend everything that I wanted to happen here professionally or personally was going that way. But the phone call I get is that my sister is sick. What kind of mood would I be in? There's no level of, you know, kind of selfish personal happiness nor professional happiness that would lead to me being happy with that news. So instead of dwelling on this micro issue, let me be grateful for the macro happiness that I have in the health and well-being of the people I love the most. And it almost always, and I mean always, works for me when I need to really push my own self into that mindset.
Do you have people you feel who help you keep that mindset or to drop back into that practice? Because I feel like as human beings, we tend to drift the opposite way. You know, we let those micro things in our day-to-day kind of take over, and then we get stuck with that energy of nothing's going my way, nothing's working, everything's hard. Do you have that naturally, or just?
I don't have that. I don't have that gear at all. And I know it's like, you know, I always struggle talking about this because I'm aware that it's the minority, but it's my truth. I just, because I'm very accountable and I'm not entitled. When something's not going my way, my mind goes into, what am I doing wrong? And that doesn't make me beat myself up. That actually makes me feel empowered that I can fix it. So, but to answer the question, I would say my mom and my best friend Brandon are two very optimistic, positive reinforcements. So I think, you know, they're, you know, not that I need to rely on it. It's more like maintenance than it is fixing. I think subconsciously when I need a little maintenance and don't even realize it, I'm probably speaking to them more often.
Did you know that women were excluded from clinical research policy by federal law until 1993? Women belong in scientific research. They are essential. But not only that, how can we trust any of the data when it comes to our bodies if nothing used to exist? Ritual took this gap and conducted a university-led human clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy. The results? It increased vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. That's some data we can trust. Ritual is a clinically backed multivitamin for women 18 plus with high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It is USP verified, meaning you can trust what you're putting in your body and know that it actually works. And only about 1% of supplement brands on the market have the USP verified mark. Not only does Ritual take your health seriously, they are also invested in the health of the planet. Ritual is a female-founded B Corp. They use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. I have been through the ringer when it comes to vitamins, and that's why I love Ritual, because I can actually trust that it does what it's supposed to do, and it comes from a company that actually cares. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/yogagirl. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/yogagirl for 25% off.
Do you have a daily practice just to take care of yourself, to stay in that space, something you do every day? Or is it this overarching energy you just wake up with.
I think that's right. I think it's every second. I think it's my oxygen. I am within my mind at all times around this issue. It is that effective. It is that. It also isn't a farce. Like, this has now been consistent for a very long, 20, 30 years of, like, in this kind of state. I would argue as soon as I was done with school, which is a real negative framework for me, I've been basically in this place of gratitude that I get to do what I love and that I'm good at. And then that feeds all the other aspects of gratitude, professionally, personally, things of that nature. I mean, we spend so much time in our professions that it's, I think, why I've zeroed in on trying to help people really debate how to make themselves happy.
And it's this reminds me of something that my husband isn't really a big social media guy, doesn't really, you know, not so much out there in the world. He's a Caribbean surfer dude. And he didn't know so much about you. And we had a friend at the house and he said, you know, Dennis is my husband. If you're in the world of business, of entrepreneurship, if that's your religion, then Gary is Jesus. We had this kind of laugh of like, man, that's a really big statement to make. I feel like when we listen to you speak, you have a way of weaving in spirituality through gratitude in a way where you feel it. Sometimes it feels like you're preaching when you're speaking. Does it ever feel that way to you?
It does a little bit. I think you're right, and I think I love that, and I fear it. Meaning, I love it because without being deeply knowledgeable about spirituality and religion, it means some of these things are pretty tried and true and have lasted a long time and are stories that people continue to tell. I fear it because I think the other part of me that makes me who I am within the entrepreneurial landscape, which is I'm pretty successful, is that I'm extremely practical and I'm an executor. And I worry that people think you can just rah-rah or motivate yourself to success. And yeah, you know this, there's a small subset of people who don't necessarily love me. They think I'm too aggressive. And it's because I'm suffocating excuses, I believe in accountability, which often comes at the conflict of spirituality or religion.
Is that it wasn't my fault or there's a bigger force there out there, you mean in that sense?
Yeah, or God will take care of this for me if I just keep praying. Like, God's not going to execute your marketing plan. Like, you know, like it's a real thing. And like, I think it depends on one's perspective, but I think like, that juxtaposition of like, you know, very macro belief and tried and true principles with deep, deep micro execution and hard work and, you know, humility, really, I think is a formula that tends to bring success.
And I think this is a good segue for me into this question, because this relates so much to the industry that I'm in, the yoga world, where, you know, there's a lot of people out there who have taken something very, very, you know, personal and spiritual and sacred to them, wanting to take that passion, turn it into a business, get out there in the world and start teaching yoga. And something that I hear a lot is, you know, I'm trying to manifest. I'm meditating, I'm practicing, I'm doing my yoga practice, I'm really, you know, in the zone with this, but how come I'm not growing? How come I'm not there scaling my business? What's not working? You know, do I need to meditate a little harder?
This is what leads to a lot of things I talk about, which is, you know, how I got to things like patience. You know, a lot of times when I talk to friends about this, I'm like, well, tell me about it. And they're like, well, and I'm like, okay. And then they've been only doing it for 2.5 years. And they're baffled why they're not making millions or at the top of their game. And I try to remind them that they're like 5 seconds in. You know, I mean, 2.5 years is just not a very long period of time.
And what about for people you think who are, because that also is true to some people who are grinding at the same thing, you know, for a really, really, really long time, doing the best they can. Do you have any advice when it comes to having that up-leveling moment?
Yeah, I mean, if you've been doing something for 13 years, very hard to the best of your ability and the results aren't there, A, you have to fundamentally do it completely differently. B, there's a high likelihood that you stink at it. Now, if you love yoga teaching and your thought of like success is 500,000 a year and you're stuck at 87,000 and you've done it for 13 years and I've just said you stink at it, quote unquote, the reality is if you're happy because you love yoga teaching and you've figured out how to live within the lifestyle of $87,000 and not amassed a lot of debt buying things to act like you're successful, well, then you've actually won. But the market is the market. This is not me deciding. I don't think you stink. The market told you for the last 13 years that you stink.
Yeah. I mean, it's really true. And I think especially in the yoga industry, it's especially true also because it comes, teaching yoga, making a living in that field comes along with a little bit of shame, I think, or I see that a lot in this world where it's almost like it's shameful. We shouldn't talk too much about wanting to make money, wanting to be abundant, wanting to get rich, wanting to really have everything we totally dream for.
That makes sense to me. I think we tend to demonize what the left or the right, the spiritual or financial. It's as if you can't see the value in both. It's really sad, and it's led to a lot of the division in America and around the world. Like, I just don't understand why somebody can't be purple. Why do you have to be black and why do you have to be blue and red? Like, why can't you be entrepreneurial and spiritual?
I mean, this is like the internal question, I feel like, in this. I swear, every person I have on this show who is in the wellness world has started out with that kind of, yeah, like it's shameful or you're not supposed to make money. I think when you start off teaching yoga, people tell you, but this is spiritual for you. You should do it for free, you know, and it's led to this market or this industry where people aren't making any money.
My big thing when I hear that from people is like, you do it for free. I'm not telling you how to live your life. Don't tell me how to live mine. Like, if you're supposed to teach yoga for free, you do that. Like, don't worry about me. This is my house. I'll decorate it how I want, but I won't judge yours. And so, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's not super complicated. I mean, it's so easy for people. I think one of the least spiritual things is to cast judgment on others.
Oh, hell yeah. And somehow that's the most common thing, especially in that world, is that quasi-spiritualist thing of like, I'm more spiritual than you, so I am not out there trying to make money, you know.
And that's what leads to some of the content I talk about, which is the ability not to listen, both to pro and con. Don't over get hyped when somebody's like, oh my God, you're so amazing. You have a $1 million yoga teaching business. You're the best. Don't take that in, because then when somebody says, you're a farce, this is supposed to be spiritual, you can't be charging this, you don't hear that person either. And I think people are addicted to compliments, which then allows them to be crippled by people that put judgment on them or negative. And I think that's something that I think a lot about. I've really gotten, whether it was natural, it was parenting, it was environment, I just have not had the ability to think I'm special. I think about what you just said earlier about that friend telling you, right? Like, that's an outlandish statement. And for some reason, in my mind, when I hear that, I take it as I understand the perspective of that. And I'm so grateful that I have the capabilities to even lead to one even saying something like that. But I don't jump into starting to get high on my own supply and believe it, in the same way that I don't struggle with negative feedback because I know that person has no context.
But it's a hard thing to do, I think, especially on social media. I think especially with young entrepreneurs or people who are out there trying to build a brand, trying to build a business, getting a little bit of traction, and then suddenly you have negative feedback because it kind of answers that question we're asking ourselves all the time. Am I good enough?
Yeah, but I would argue in a lot of ways the reverse. Most people have a father or mother that are the person that's saying they can't do it, and that carries more weight than 1 million anonymous people on a social network. I would argue that if you look at the data, that there's a lot more positive reinforcement happening in those comment sections than negative, but we tend to dwell on the negative, not get fueled by the positive.
I mean, especially if it's already ingrained, if we genuinely believe we're not enough, we're not going to make it, you know, we heard that our whole childhood, our whole life, then all it takes is one person telling us, yeah, you're not going to make it, or this is fake, this is bad, and you're going to get totally stuck on that. So for me, we talk a lot about in the yoga girl community around therapy and healing those childhood wounds, you know, changing that conversation. Is that something you've ever, you know, participated in, kind of working through that old sticky stuff?
Of course. I think I'm an entrepreneur disguised as a therapist, or vice versa. You know, like, I think the reality is that all this is mindset. I spend an enormous amount of time trying to pick up context on my employees. I'm funny because I'm so not interested in prying into people's personal life, but I'm deeply interested in that context because it helps me manage and lead better. So, yeah, something I think about every day. I mean, nature and nurture. This has been established long before came along. And so I believe in it. And I, and like big data, I'm good at synthesizing it and creating observations from it. And I'm passionate about it.
And I think it really shines through. And I think that's why it's, I can listen to you speak about things that maybe I'm not actually all that interested in, like big picture things, but because you can relate it to that, there's something heartfelt that makes me go, yeah, I feel that. Even though I can't relate to that situation, I feel that.
Mothers deserve the absolute best. So this Mother's Day, spoil the moms in your life with little luxuries from Osea. Osea's skin and body care is the perfect way to remind all the moms, mother figures, caregivers, grandmothers, and mother-in-laws in your life to make time for themselves. If you have been looking for the perfect gift, I recommend Osea's Andaria Algae Body Oil. I've been using it for years, and it seems like every single time I apply it, I get compliments on my skin. This body oil is rich, but it's never greasy, and it's clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity. Your skin will feel more sculpted and toned, and you'll be left feeling silky, soft, and glowing. Another favorite of mine is the Andaria Collagen Body Lotion. Ever since I've been using collagen, I have noticed a difference in my skin. In fact, it's never been better. Using Osea's body oil and lotion together is a mega moisture duo, giving you a full body glow. Osea's products are infused with their signature Andaria seaweed, but it's also clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified. Really just a perfect gift for yourself, the moms in your life, and even the planet. Spoil the moms in your life with clean, vegan skin and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code YOGA at oseamalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to oseamalibu.com and use the code YOGA for 10% off.
I wanna ask you a personal question or something that's personal for me. So I'm just coming out on the other end of this kind of a burnout. I don't love identifying it or kind of, you know, putting it in that box, but I've had a lot of years of working really, really fucking hard for my business, for my family. And I ended up deprioritizing myself somehow along the way. Like I had a kid 3 years ago. Everything became much more challenging, obviously, with a baby and now a toddler. And I've started to slow down the past couple of months, really making those active decisions to prioritize downtime and rest and time spent at home undisturbed and all of this. And of course, immediately, I am also sensing a slowing down in the growth of my business, which drives me insane because I want to believe that there is some sort of reality out there where I can stay calm and peaceful and have all those things that I want when it comes to taking care of myself and still see some growth when it comes to my business. Do you think that that's a possibility, or is it like having your cake and eating it too?
I think it's a possibility if you hire well. You know, it's a. I think it's a little cake and eat it too. Like, you know, as you know, a business is like a child, and how much you put into it tends to be how much you get out of it. And so, I just think it's more about realizing that you're making a choice that is better for you in the macro. And though, since you associate as an entrepreneur and it's your art in some way, that's a tough pill to swallow. But you're choosing for the betterment of your macro these alternatives, and that's nice and that's good. And if you want to sustain growth, you're going to have to quote unquote be better in the limited in the less time that you put into it, or you're going to have to hire infrastructure that allows you to scale as you try to find the balance.
Did you experience anything around that? I mean, I know you're a dad and your kids are older than my daughter, but have you had moments like that where you really felt okay? And then what did that look like?
It looked like me calibrating the fact of like, I'm okay with this because I want to come home on Friday night, or I don't work weekends anymore and that's good. Like, I get this, but yes, my numbers at Wine Library will be down. It's just making choices and then trying to build up the people around me. You know, as with my content, I did my own content for 7 years. And then I decided to hire people around it because I wanted it to grow, and I didn't have the bandwidth because VaynerMedia was starting to grow. So it's very obvious. It's about not making your identity the business growth, right? It can't be your identity.
Yeah, but it's hard to not get totally swept up with, you know, like it's going so amazingly great, but I'm killing myself, which, you know, equates. The time I put in is what I get in return as well. But I don't know. For me, it's also redefining what success is. You know, like I want to be home with my kid and be a really good mom and not be burnt out and have a thriving business.
Now you got it. And the thriving business can be redefined. And also, if when you put patience into it, when you put patience into it, it plays out in a totally different way. Like, what's great about entrepreneurship that's different than being an athlete is you could be doing it in 17 years.
Yeah. Long-term thinking is not really my forte, but yeah, no, I get you.
But like, think about it. It's really powerful, right? Like in 17 years, your three-year-old is not going to be around you every day.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It goes by fast. People keep telling me that. She's three, so it's still like the days are still very long and the nights as well. But how is fatherhood for you right now? Do your kids have an interest in this world of yours as well?
Yes. I mean, like, yes and no. My daughter is not an entrepreneur, from what I can tell. She's 10. I feel comfortable in saying that. She's also an all-time good student, so that's interesting, because that's super weird for me. But she loves, like, content, and she's very creative. And my little guy is really into sports cards and going to the show and, like, shows those tendencies. And so it's been very fruitful and rewarding and something that I love quite a bit. You know, as you probably know, like, and you can tell, I'm uncomfortably private in my actual personal life in comparison to, like, how much content and how prolific I am in communicating in the other parts of my career. And so it's wildly enjoyable. My family is my world. That is my infrastructure. People get a whole lot of me on the business, entrepreneurial and personal brand stuff, and a whole not a lot of me in personal side. And that's how I like it, and that's what's sustainable and kind of what works for me.
And I love how we can find our own, you know, really the day-to-day of what works through that. For me, it's kind of the other way around. I think because I've been slightly, I'm realizing this now, I've been slightly uncomfortable taking on the role of like, hey, I'm really, you know, working to scale my business and I want to talk about how I do that in this world, because it's been a challenging conversation for me. But in terms of social media, like, I share more of the personal day-to-day, motherhood, yoga, all of this. Do you think authenticity is the way to go on social media always, or the combination of strategy and authenticity?
Always authenticity. I mean, the strategy should be authentic. Like, anything that isn't actually true or is embellished is inherently vulnerable. Like, fake it till you make it is only going to trick losers. So yeah, it's the only strategy. That's why I don't talk about a lot of things, you know? If you really look at it, like, I don't want to, people start talking about things they don't know about because they think it's a strategy for social media. That's crazy.
Yeah, but what about that, you know, just scrolling through Instagram, you see, I mean, there's so many people out there putting on, you know, like sharing the really good looking body stuff or the Photoshop photos or look at me in my perfect life. And you can kind of sense that, you know, the authenticity isn't fully there, but then still it's where people gravitate a lot. Do you have any advice for people? A lot of people ask that and for this show.
Just a bunch of likes and a bunch of followers does not mean happiness or business success. And until people realize that, they'll be continue to be tricked by this question.
So how can we help them along there? Because I feel like that's such a big thing right now.
By answering the question in the way I just did when you asked it, and by allocating our busy time for things like this, right? We just did, which is what's so powerful. It's what keeps me motivated in the fact that the far majority of people don't execute on the things I talk about, is that I know one person right now just heard that and actually changed their relationship with social media.
I mean, I think that's true. It was one of the most asked questions, you know, where should I be focusing my energy? Should I do this? Should I do that? I think.
If we want to get tactical, since we've been very high level, look, TikTok is an underpriced platform. Like, LinkedIn is an underpriced platform. And what I mean by that is you can post on there, spend no media dollars, and get organic reach without having an audience. And that is very powerful for the far majority of the people that are listening.
Totally, 100%.
Like, people hit me up all the time, like, Gary, they're like, Gary, this stinks. Like, Instagram used to be so good. Like, I was on there, and, like, now everyone's copied me. And I always reply, I'm like, first of all, you copied someone else. Second of all, like, that's called supply and demand. Like, kudos to you that you got on Instagram early enough that it brought you value, just like the person before you did that on Facebook and the person before you did that on MySpace. Like, Tila Tequila was the Instagram girl long before Instagram existed. She did it on MySpace. Like, that's what always happens. And, like, I'm sorry that now you have to compete with more people. You're competing with more people now. And, like, if you're not good enough to be the best of that competition, you don't deserve to get the brand deal. or the sell your subscription product. It's called real life.
So you think it's safe to say people are just sometimes a little bit too full of themselves?
I think people get caught in a micro moment and think that they are owed something. I'm very happy that you've won for 18 months on Instagram, but then when it's not working as well, they blame the algorithm instead of the fact they aren't putting out anything new or interesting.
And still, it's like the number one most talked about thing right now is, how do we change this? How do we get back to what it was? And it's just, yeah, it's not the same, and it's going to continue to change.
It will never go back to where it was, and it shouldn't. Instagram's free. It shouldn't be. Like, if that's what happens. Like, if that's the case, can I go back to 1880 and buy up New York City? Like, it's so laughable. Like, Instagram should go back to where it was 6 years ago for you. So what? You can make more money on it without paying for it? Like, what are we talking about here? The level of entitlement is audacious.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So where do you think we're going? You know, what do you project in this online world of social media? Like 5-10 years from now, where are we going to be?
That I never know. I know where we're at now, and I know what's emerging kind of in the short term. I think audio is a very interesting space. If people don't have podcasts, they should highly consider it. Audio ads. Spotify's got some great products coming soon. Alexa and Google Home will be at scale with technology at scale, and those devices will be interesting. I mean, I can't imagine being in the yoga business and not being full-fledged on TikTok right now. It is completely winning on an everyday basis and growing in the early 20-year-old set, which is extremely interesting target for your world. But, you know, if you're not making 3 pieces of content for TikTok every day and you're spending that time and energy complaining about Instagram, you deserve to lose.
And what about for people who aren't in this world in that sense, you know, the regular day-to-day, say a yoga teacher, for instance, who's just grinding, teaching classes, super passionate, great at what they do, and they don't want to have that kind of online presence? What kind of advice do you have for that type of entrepreneur?
Great. I mean, kudos to you. Recognize that you're vulnerable because the world continues to go into that world, and somebody in your local town may start a profile and steal all your clients. Know that could happen. But if you don't want to do it because you don't like it, like, that's nice. I'm fine with that. I just, as long as you respect the vulnerability, like, this is how the world's moving. Don't forget that your practice of yoga and teaching that took away from some gym that sells treadmills. So if somebody comes along and builds a huge local profile on Facebook and Instagram and starts taking your clients, don't be mad at the advances of technology or the way that the consumer has shifted. 40 years ago, nobody went to yoga classes.
Right. And now it's an $80 billion industry globally. And that leads me to my next question, because there are so many people who are living that grind. You know, I don't know how much you know about, you know, the business of teaching yoga, but it is a massive business, $80 billion business worldwide. And teaching yoga, you make maybe 20, 30, maybe 40 bucks a class if you're lucky. From the way I look at it, is that there's a model in the yoga world that isn't sustainable, because it's never going to pay off to just teach yoga. You know, every yoga teacher has a side job. Do you have any words of wisdom for the people who are, you know, looking to totally make this their passion, knowing that they have entered a field that's super challenging to become abundant from?
Well, I mean, I think happiness needs to be the ROI. It just has to be. And so if this is the thing that makes you the happiest in the world, maybe you're not destined to make $680,000 a year, and that is super okay. If you want to make $680,000 a year and this is what you love, well, then you need to be the best of the, you know, 80 billion worth of teachers in the world. That's how the economics of life work. And if you're more focused on 700,000 a year than you are on the thing that makes you the happiest, well, then yoga teaching could be your side hustle and your occasional thing, and go do something else that has more earning power. That's a really practical, you know, that's a practical answer to all three. All three, those are your three options.
Yeah, they are.
You know, like, Gary, that's not fair. I love this and I should be able to make money. I'm like, good news, you can. I promise you, the top 1,000 yoga teachers in the world financially are making a lot of money.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, taking yoga teacher training is, it's thousands of dollars. And then it's kind of selling this big dream of, you know, pursue your passion, go do this, go change the world through yoga. But then you have a yoga studio, you can fit like 30 people in there. People pay 10 bucks a class. It's not a sustainable model.
No, but as you know, maybe not the most popular character in the yoga world, but then a gentleman came around and created a version of the yoga and built a brand around it. Like, you know, it's not the consumer's fault that there's so many yoga teachers that the price of a yoga class is 10 bucks. It's not their fault. It's called supply and demand.
Right. But say you would want to take a step in the direction of trying to change that, because I'm passionate about that. You know, I lead teacher trainings. I want my students to be able to go out there and not have such a hard time.
They have to have a unique value prop. Maybe you play better music during a class or no music at all. Maybe it's cold instead of hot. You have to innovate. If you're just going to be like, come to my studio and have a yoga class, there's 8 fucking trillion people that do that. It's 10 bucks.
Yeah. You're hitting the nail on the head, but
nobody feels bad for McDonald's that their burger's $1 because there's also Burger King and Wendy's. My big thing when it comes to business talk is like, listen, the market's the market. It's like, you know, like yoga used to be more expensive when there was less studios. I mean, just the way it is. I promise you that if one company controlled all the water in the world and bottled water and they controlled it, it'd be a lot more expensive than a buck. If you've signed up to do business, you can't cry about business.
No, true that. Okay, I have one more personal question for you. So I'm in a place right now where I grew my tiny little business from my, you know, kitchen. We have a team of 30 people now, and you know, we've never taken a loan, never had an investor. And I'm in a place where I'm wondering, is there a moment when you know is the right time to look for an investment to exponentially scale the business? Or is it something that just needs to be strategized and you have to just make it work somehow? I'm kind of waiting for the sign that it's the time.
Yeah, I think it's a personal decision. I think that people are romanticizing it too much. I think the second you take investment, is a bad day, not a good day. I try to tell, when I hear homegrown 30 employees, no funding, I always ask them, why not bank loan? You know, because it's out of fashion. But if you're using capital to grow quicker, you could do it in the source of a loan and not give up any of your business. So, you know, don't put raising capital on a pedestal.
Okay, that's good advice. Yeah, I think we have.
You know, yeah, people feel like it's some sort of thing you graduate into. It usually leans to I literally have had 2 dinners in the last week where the person said the worst mistake they ever made was take capital.
Hey, if there's something we can do for you right now, everybody listening, something that we can do to enrich your day, what would that be?
Just say hello. You know, I'm all over the place. It's not hard to find. Just say hello would be awesome. Tell me how you like the interview. I love feedback. So.
Thank you so much, Gary. Thank you. So grateful for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode, and a huge thanks to my guest, Gary V. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to listen and subscribe to other great episodes of the Yoga Girl podcast, Conversations from the Heart. You can find all of them on yogagirl.com, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you normally get your shows. Don't forget to leave a review while you are there. Thanks to the folks at Cadence 13 for their production work, and thanks to my sponsors. Please support them the way they support this podcast. I'll see you next week.